a Rayo Original Podcast.
Step into our confessional. Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation.
From Greatest Hits Radio,
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Yes, a top show which is going to be brought to you without any error, without any mistakes. Everything is going to flow beautifully. It's going to be, again, one of the reasons why people say when you stop them on the street, as I do, that this is the number one podcast in the world.
Imagine someone stopping you on the street.
Can I just ask
what you think is the number one podcast?
And then I tell them.
And they always tell you, do they?
Yes.
Well, you stop them or they stop you?
Sometimes it's both at the same time. We stop each other. We go, well, that's a coincidence. What do you think? What do I think? Well, it's exactly the same. And it's the Greatest Hits Radio Confessions podcast.
Great. That's covered.
Uh-huh.
Because the world is divided, and yet this podcast brings everyone together, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, that's good. I like that.
Sister Susie is here and not in the pub.
I am indeed.
Brother Matthew is also here from his gutter.
I am, yes.
Sister Holly is sprawled over the cupboard of tat.
Why?
One more time.
That's not how you protect anything.
My toddler now does this and goes, space.
Does this.
That's how you protect it. Arms out.
I see.
Legs out.
Legs out. Space.
Space.
Yeah, but that's not what Holly does. She's sprawled over the cupboard of tat.
Space.
Making sure that nobody can get anywhere near it unless she says it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
While you're away, we gave out lots of stuff.
Coming up, we're going to be stopping
at the Parish Notice Board for all the latest notices and five-star reviews. The not-for-broadcast section, of course, and all the confessions that featured on this week's top drive time show on Greatest Hits Radio, including Stephen's fishing fail, messing about on the river, Dave's boarding school adventure, radio is a sound salvation, and Julie's confession, hello clouds, hello sky. But we start with Joe DiMaggio's confession, where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? So it kind of answers its own
thing. It does,
thing.
Yeah, where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio?
Where have you gone? Yeah. I'm here writing this confession. Yeah. There you go, very straightforward.
Simon Mayo's confessions. We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Today's confession comes from Joe DiMaggio.
Oh.
That's how he signed it anyway.
Right.
Father Simon, Brother Matt, Sister Susie, my confession comes to the halcyon days of the 1980s. I believe Simon had just joined Radio 1, and I will use the pseudonym, if it's okay, of Joe DiMaggio, famous American sports person. I was a police officer, says Joe, working shifts in a busy area. I won't name the force or the station. I was partnered with a colleague I shall call Baron Munchausen due to his propensity for spouting outrageously exaggerated tales, smelling suspiciously like bovine manure. Okay. You name it, he had done it. He had trials for various professional football and Formula One teams, but turned them down to follow his vocation. He dated numerous famous women, from actresses to models and singers. He had single-handedly arrested gangs of armed robbers and rescued people from burning buildings, and he seemed to believe what he was saying whilst everyone else could see through it. More of which in a moment. On the night in question, we were on our grub break in our small canteen come restroom, playing pool and relaxing. We only had two pool cues, one that was damaged but still just about usable, and a good one. As the Baron was, of course, the world champion pool player in a previous life, he insisted on having the better one, befitting his skill and status, and I was left with the broken one. We'd got in the habit, only on nights when there was nobody else in the canteen, of using our waste silver foil, which had kept our Spam sandwiches fresh, to scrunch into balls and pretend that we were in the baseball World Series. Using an inverted pool cue as a baseball bat, it was imperative to hold the pool cue three quarters of the way towards the tip end to A, give a greater surface area to strike the ball, and B, the metal weights in the end of the cue gave it greater heft and therefore kinetic energy to hit a home run.
Good thinking.
Running around the pool table, that's what you had to do.
Yeah.
We were bottom of the third and the bases were loaded, whatever that means. And I was in, says Joe. The ball is thrown towards me. I could see the ball floating towards me in perfect clarity, moving from left to right with a heavy anti-clockwise spin. My feet were planted, core engaged, opening my body up slightly as I struck the ball perfectly. Everything now happened in slow motion. I saw the ball's ideal trajectory traveling the length of the room, but at the same time, one of the 2-inch steel weights flew out of the damaged queue.
Oh, no.
It travelled like a bullet from the Matrix, as straight as an arrow and straight onto the Baron's head.
Oh.
All of a sudden, everything changed to double speed as the Baron went down like a felled bull elephant. Not understanding what had happened, others assumed that he'd been shot through the window which overlooked the road and dived on the floor. We worked in a pretty violent area and it wasn't beyond the realms of possibility.
Okay.
And blood had started spurting out of the wound, which thankfully had missed any vital organs on his head, but only just. Four of us sprang into action. Sherlock, he was the best and hardest working police officer I ever came across, ran to the toilet and grabbed an industrial-sized toilet roll. Muppet, who was the most useless police person ever trained, ran across the car park to our admin building to alert our supervisor, and Bradall, a small, boring tool, dialed 999 and I grabbed a mop to start eliminating the incriminating evidence.
What?
After a few wipes with the mop, I looked round to see the Baron looking like Carmen Miranda as Sherlock had used the entire loo roll to his head. His head was now about half a metre in diameter. The paramedics turned up and took the Baron off to hospital, where he was admitted, and I visited him the following day because it was the least I could do, really. I entered the ward to find the Baron being attended to by a host of nurses. He had, of course, turned the circumstances to his advantage and told them he'd sustained the injury while arresting burglars and had been beaten up with a pickaxe. But our hero still managed to arrest them all before colleagues turned up, and then he lost consciousness. You could get tired of this.
Yes, a little.
So I feel compelled to ask a few people for forgiveness. Clearly our supervisor had to investigate what had happened, as the initial thoughts were that it was a deliberate assault on the annoying Baron. The prime suspect for this was Sherlock, who had an uncomfortable few days under suspicion. To the nursing staff, who got suckered into believing they were caring for a real-life hero and prospective George Medal winner for gallantry, and to the rest of the shift because we were banned from holding the World Series ever again. I would ask the Baron for forgiveness, but he is no longer with us. But I really seek forgiveness from Sister Susie, as I am sure she can see it was an accident with no malice whatsoever. Sherlock was exonerated, the Baron basked in the limelight and attention he craved, and most importantly, we got some new pool cues, which is, of course, a very good turn-up for the books there in the end. From Joe DiMaggio, well, who'd have thought it? Well, a very eventful evening, what do you say, Suze? Because he's particularly focusing his forgiveness request on you.
Yeah, well, he is right, there wasn't any malice, but by half, wasn't he stupid? Why are you playing baseball with a broken pool cue and crumped up silver paper inside? Just asking for trouble. Danger, danger there. I've also got a little issue with you mopping up the evidence before, you know, you're actually attending to the person that's injured or calling 999, although someone else did that. So I know.
Yeah, that was Bradall, a small, boring tool.
Okay.
The Baron does sound like an idiot, and you know, we all know that person that you just can't stand because they go on and on and on about all the things you've done and they've done it before you did and all of these things. So for that reason, I'm going to forgive him.
Brother Matthew.
Yeah, I'm going to forgive. I thought that was rather good with the queue. Who'd have thought that the end of the queue would come off? No one could have seen that coming.
No.
So that's fair enough. And they dialed 999. You'd think they'd have a direct line in the police for the people on the 999.
It's the 80s.
It was the 80s, wasn't it? That's true. And everything else went well, and your man ended up in hospital. Everyone thought he was great. But they didn't get to play baseball anymore there. What a real shame. But everything else as well. So, yes, I'm going to forgive.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
What happened there?
It's sort of like, you know, I've got nowhere to go, haven't I?
No,
yeah.
Going off
but
the scale.
Still
there.
Very good, whoever that guy
also,
is.
Also, Bradall, it depends where you put the emphasis, doesn't it? Small, boring tool or small, boring tool, which is what you would normally say for a
Bradall.
You
say a small, boring tool.
Can I have a small... I'd like to buy a small, boring tool, please.
Yes.
But if you're referring to someone with a nickname, you're a small, boring tool.
You're a small, boring... Then nobody's going to be happy with that nickname, really.
So that works. I'm glad we've
cleared that up. Well,
Susie's looking at me as though...
Well, no, I was thinking, does it depend where the, like, comma is?
Well, small, boring tool. Small, boring
small,
tool.
Boring tool.
So there's no comma.
Is there small, a, there boring isn't a comma, tool. Is there?
Okay. What would you say? What would you say, Holly? I just...
A small, boring tool.
Equal emphasis. Okay, that gets you out of everything. off to the parish notice board we go, and Matt... We're
testing whether you could say the words. I would say it like this. Small, boring tool.
Matt's, here come Matt's reviews for this week.
Right, yes. Here they are, and they're all five stars or they don't get on. And Mr. L Street... says, five stars. My name is Mr. L Street from Bolton. What a brilliant podcast. The first time I heard your podcast was on a drive back from college with my dad back in 2017. Five stars as always.
There's always a moment.
There is a point there.
Matt reads it, where the gears engage. Yeah. And he goes, oh, that's what you're saying.
L Street. Okay, Nathan, normal name, says, five stars. Five stars. Listening to the confessions makes the workday bearable. Matt is a legend. Seriously, how hasn't someone nominated him for Secretary General of the UN?
That's so strategic.
There's got to be some power there, surely. Perhaps with Susie or Holly as his deputy to keep him grounded.
Yeah, you need somebody to keep him grounded.
Oh, no. I would insist on that.
No, I would not.
They're here to keep me grounded. Thanks. Yeah. All the love.
I'm just one of you guys.
Just like you. I'm just Secretary General, so I can.
Does the Secretary General of the UN have a uniform?
They definitely should, yes.
You wear sunglasses indoors.
Sunglasses indoors. Good point, Holly. Okay. My own sort of mini schnauzer. And
why is mini schnauzer?
That's not very authoritative.
Light blue, like they had at Pontins, something like that. Simon, as the backbone of the podcast, of course, would have to end up as Prime Minister of every country to maintain some accountability. This is falling apart. Every country. Perhaps he should try and do the accents for each of the nations he would now represent. That makes it better, doesn't it? Because you can do all the accents. Apart from
most of them.
All of them. Welsh. And Amazon customer says, love... Whoa, we're not reading that out. Five stars.
You can say that.
We can't say... I'm not saying that.
I'll say it.
No, you're not. We can't say that.
I'm going to say it.
We are definitely not. We're not editing that.
Because pish just means nonsense.
Yeah.
You're talking pish.
Yeah, it's fine. Like... Scottish?
Is it Scottish?
Yes.
Good for you. Matt was not involved in that part of the edit. Amazon customer says 100% excellent. Just love a group of friends talking to brilliant chemistry. The confessions. Warner, how's this gone through? Well done.
Love talking pish. Depending on context, pish has a few different meanings historically. Yes. An exclamation of mild contempt in Scottish, Irish, or British slang. It means rubbish or nonsense.
Yeah.
So what are they saying? We're talking nonsense. Yeah. So love talking nonsense. Should we drop that in? I said, love talking nonsense by Amazon customer.
But you can say the other words.
No, I'm not sure we can.
We're just telling you that you can.
No, I just said, I'm not sure. Thank God I'm here. Once again, you don't get to be Secretary General of the UN by talking.
You're not Secretary General of the UN, just to make
It is a dream, isn't it, Holly?
With your
Holly,
politics.
Susie.
We're both the same.
You will when you're my deputies at
on
the UN.
On the one hand, you have some kind of uniform, but then you've got a tiny little dog.
Why did you pick a miniature schnauzer? Mini schnauzer, that's what all the Secretary Generals.
Oh, really?
I will find you pictures of Boutros Ghali.
Secretary General.
I think you'll find it's Boutros Ghali.
I know, but it's not Secretary General.
Yeah,
it's
Kofi Annan. He was another one.
General.
Yeah, Secretary
Does
General.
Does he sit on your desk nicely, the dog?
Boutros Ghali. Well, he will if I ask. Yes, and the schnauzers.
It's almost as though Matt doesn't hear anything anyone says. He just carries on.
Good job we did this in one.
Susie, what have you selected from the notice board?
I've got an email from Charlie.
Good.
Who said, dear patron saint of pub, Susie, Knight of the Tap Cupboard, Holly, Champion of the Gutter, Matt, Righteous Ringleader of Redemption, Simon Mayo, and the rest of the Greatest Hits team who bring the confessions to our ears. Since this year, my birthday just happened to fall on a Friday, the 12th of June, so next week? I thought I'd chance my luck and request a shout out on your wonderful podcast. Not long after graduating, I started working in R&D. Whilst the job itself is great, it can get a little lonely and monotonous since I'm often stuck on my own in a lab for long stretches of the day. Since rediscovering your show on Greatest Hits, I have enjoyed back-to-back marathons of your podcast daily, chuckling along as I work. It makes time fly by and helps immensely whenever I have a tough day. Although I fear I may be getting a reputation for being a mad scientist with the amount of laughter coming from behind a closed laboratory door. I suppose I should apologise to any customers brought round to view our facility who may be left quite bewildered and concerned at what kind of madman they've let loose on their precious, very expensive projects. The best part of every work week is Friday lunchtime when I get to bask in an entirely new episode and I deliberately schedule my day so I can listen to it the second it becomes available. Yeah. My favourite confession has to be the child who found an inflatable doll.
Oh, yeah.
And not knowing what it was, brought it to a dad's allotment to show him. I don't think I've laughed so hard in years. Thank you so much for helping me keep doing a job that I love. Best of luck for the future and long live the Confessions podcast, Charlie. P.S. On an unrelated note, I've heard Simon mention several times being a fan of the classic 60s sci-fi Thunderbirds.
Of course.
Myself and a lot of my friends, having grown up watching it and reading various reruns and adaptations of the shows, are also fans, even going so far as to throw a party on its 60th birthday last year. I figured since I was writing in anyway, I might as well take the opportunity to ask which Thunderbird is his favourite.
Well, it was always very difficult. I used to have a Thunderbird's uniform, which I used to walk around the house in.
Wow.
Which was
in your 30s? I hope so.
What colour was really, it?
It's all blue. They're all blue.
It's like Matt's UN outfit.
It's exactly the same, isn't it? It's all tied
Pontins.
Together.
But it's got a blue sash. And a
gold.
Hat.
It's got some gold on it.
Yeah. So I think I would have to say Thunderbird 2 because it has all the extra pods that go in it, including Thunderbird 4. So, and no one wants to be John in Thunderbird 5 because that just stays in space. So Thunderbird 1 is exciting. Thunderbird 2 probably would be the answer to that. Do you want any more detail about that?
No, I like it. It's good. I'm sure Charlie is
Alan
thrilled.
Alan always went in Thunderbird 3, which was quite exciting. But I think I go for Virgil, who, of course, was in charge of Thunderbird 2.
He's got the white hair. Has he got white hair?
No, I think that's Jeff Tracy. He's the dad.
Oh, okay.
Not to be confused also with Bones. No, Brains. He was the boffin. And Lady Penelope. And Parker, who drove her car.
Yes, m'lady.
And so there you go.
That's the one you always do. I thought you were going to say Parker because that's the impression you always do.
That was my Parker impression.
Yeah.
When you say I always do, I
do. You do.
Anyway,
love it.
Charlie, you're absolutely right. Very good. Where are we now? Is this all coming out?
I think we should give Charlie a mug.
Well, that's not up to you, though, is it?
No.
Unfortunately not. Let's, Holly, what do you think?
I was confused a little bit when he said that he started working in R&D, research and development.
Yes.
I later got that. But yes, it sounds great. He's having a good time. He's having a nice laugh. A mug will be with him at some point in the future.
At some point.
This year, probably.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
So if you have something to add to our board, if you're going to write about Matt, then it's
then make it praising me to the skies. That's probably the best way to get read out.
Don't make it worse.
No. It's a very good. Well done. Got read out.
Anyway, if you'd like some tat, any of these, confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. So let's mention John Carter and Jason Bird and Robin Harrison and Neil Ogden, who are amongst those who were in touch with a secret code phrase from last week, which was, of course, bust up at the bus stop. Matt will have a new secret code phrase, which he's preparing now.
Yes.
Do you have an idea what it might be?
Always got an idea.
Already?
Yes. Yeah. Just.
Are you open to change?
I'm always open to change. Because that's where you have to be when you're head of the UN.
Dive into the confessions, Mark, not for broadcast. And we start with Drew, the older girl may have been teasing you and making an already miserable weekend even worse. But that does not make it acceptable to season her baked potato with part of your own toenail.
Ooh.
The fact that she found it, asked what it was, accepted your explanation that it was a potato-flavoured pod, and then carried on chewing it, makes it only worse.
Oh, my goodness, she kept on chewing it.
Any confession that ends with someone chewing a toenail is destined... Well, I don't know, actually. We have done some.
But only when the toenail's been put in there by accident, not when it's been deliberately put into someone's baked potato.
Because we had that one where someone was clipping their toenails and put it in the crisp packet, tipped all the crisps.
That was an accident.
It was an accident, so that's okay.
And this is deliberate.
Mm. Yeah, Drew. And Tricia, throwing up into your friend's Becky's Prada handbag on the overnight bus to East Ruislip after a night out.
Wow, so many parts of this.
Was never going to make it onto the radio. To make it worse, you fell over and the vomit went all over the bus floor. And
went all over the bus floor as well.
And on a passenger.
How are you going to get out of the bus when there's a pile of...
No.
I think she's past caring by that point.
And in a
Other pieces.
A Prada handbag.
She's throwing
by the time you're throwing up into a Prada bag and then throwing it all over the floor.
Yeah, but
how do I get off the bus?
Other people
have to get off the bus, don't they? Think about that, Holly. Yeah.
You were just caring about the Prada handbag.
It should have like a mesh so that as you open it up, if someone voms, then it just
there's an idea.
In the mesh.
Get on Dragon's Den with that.
That's
going to
go through.
That would go through.
Filter out all the bad stuff.
It's a tight weave.
Still vomit.
Yeah, that's true.
Still some vomit would make it into the bag.
Yeah, Trisha, so it's not acceptable. Anyway, back to the confessions that made the cut with Steve's very eventful fishing tale messing about on the river.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Okay, today's confession, as I said, 12 certificate and a degree of masking going on, changing language here and there.
Oh, right, okay.
It comes from Stephen. Father Simon, I send you today a tale of cowardice, treachery and bribery.
Oh-ho.
The year is 1967. I am 13 years old and my friend and I have decided to go on a fishing trip to Bridgnorth from Wolverhampton on a bus. Upon arriving at Bridgnorth on a warm and sunny day, we made our way to the riverbank. We both selected fishing spots, mine down a steep bank in between two bushes, Pete's about 10 yards further upstream. We were both excited. This was going to be fun. I set up to tip fish. Are you a fisherman?
No, not so much.
I set up to tip fish, which means having you select the softest tip.
The softest tip?
To fish, yeah.
Okay.
Which meant that you watch the end of your rod to see if you had a bite while sitting on your basket. So anyway, I'm none the wiser. But anyway, this is the way Stephen is describing what he's up to.
Uh-huh.
And I was keeping quiet and still, like you had to do. And to the side of me, I had my maggot box.
Oh, lovely. Mm.
I had been fishing for about half an hour and had no bites whatsoever, so I decided to bring in my bait and change it for fresh bait. So I brought it in, I turned to my side, only to see a giant water rat sitting right next to my maggot box. The rat was sitting as if it was a meerkat on its rear legs, paws in the air and head not far away from my waist. I could clearly see the whiskers. We both looked into each other's eyes, and then I screamed, jumped into the air, heart in my mouth. The rat jumped in straight to the river and disappeared. The last thing I saw was its tail, as thick as a broom handle, sliding under the water. I leapt off my basket, scrambled up the bank, and ran stumbling to where Pete was fishing, and I sat down beside him. He turned round and said, "You look pale. What's the matter with you?" Because he was from London.
Yes, also. Yes.
Although by Wolverhampton.
Correct.
And I said, "Oh, nothing, I'm a bit bored. I haven't had a bite." Because obviously I didn't want to appear a weedy wet.
No.
Pete said, "Well, why don't you come and have a fish by me? Because there's plenty of room here." And then he said, "Give us a smoke, e bacon crisp."
What?
It was 13, so that's what it is.
Oh, right, I see. Right, I've got it. Yeah, right. Yeah,
quickly, without thinking, I said, "Yeah, all right, I do have some. But if you want one, you're going to have to go and fetch my tackle first." So Pete was obviously desperate for a smoky bacon crisp. Yep.
Yeah.
And he went off chuntering something about you idle house your father.
Yeah.
And in no time at all, he brought my tackle and then I set up next to him. Pete had been more successful than me catching fish using a so-called fly fishing method, which involved a single hook with a white maggot on the end and casting it to and fro.
Mm-hmm.
He'd caught a number of silverfish, so I changed my setup to his and fished by the side of him. After an hour or so, Peter decided to enjoy the smoke, the bacon crisp, that I had given him and sat on the bank behind me. At this point, you might have no idea where this is heading.
No idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because then, says Stephen, disaster struck. On one of my casts, I was a bit adrift with my technique, and the hook, complete with maggot, caught Pete's top eyelid. I was mortified, says Stephen. The magnet was dangling in front of his eye. The hook, however, had hooked. And obviously, he was in some pain. And in those days, we used barbed hooks, which were somewhat difficult to remove. But eventually I removed it, despite Pete wriggling and squirming like a baby. Oh. Anyway. So hang on a second. So you removed a fish hook.
No.
I did. It's
you did say.
I did warn you.
You did say.
He insisted upon another smoky bacon crisp in order to calm his nerves as compensation. Yeah. I had intended to tell Pete about the giant rat on the bus on the way home when we were well away from the river. However, as that incident had led to the hooking of the eyelid, I felt I couldn't really tell him. Don't suppose he'd have been that interested anyway. So in my guilt and shame, I bought the bag of chips that we normally shared together on the way home. And Pete seemed quite happy about that as compensation. He didn't have to pay half the chips. I paid for all of them.
Oh, right, all of the chips.
That's generosity. Okay. Well, that if you hook someone's eyelid, that's the least you can do. Anyway, this act of treachery and cowardice has stopped with me all these years, says Stephen. P.S. Great show.
Yes.
Well, I mean, that's very nice of you. Thank you very much indeed. I can imagine how you wouldn't have passed that on for a while. But anyway, a shocking fisherman's tale, a fisher boy's tale, really. Suze, what do you say?
Yeah, Stephen, no. That made me feel sick. That was, oh, I can't even.
Everyone was all right in the end.
Yeah, everyone was all right in the end, but just so, so gross. I just can't. It just makes me feel a bit sick. And also, I don't condone smoky bacon crisps. Terrible flavour. No one should have them, especially not at 13. Yeah. I'm not going to forgive.
Okay, Brother Matthew.
I'm going to forgive. I mean, we learned a lesson there, didn't we, about the soft tips and the fly fishing. And you're not supposed to, you don't sit behind someone who's casting a rod, do you? It's a bit like helicopters. Don't stand behind helicopters and fly fishing. Because there was in that movie, wasn't there, with the man with the thing? So, something about Mary. There it is. Happened in there, didn't it? Ben Stiller, what a
fringe.
Yes, a lesson for us all. So, for those reasons, I'm going to forgive.
Saint or sinner? Find them all on Simon Mayo's Confessions podcast.
You know, in previous decades, you'd have got put away.
That actually made perfect... I mean, there was a little bit of...
It didn't make perfect sense.
No. A stumble, but no. It did make sense. It was fine. You don't stand behind someone casting a thing. Casting the...
But why the helicopter?
Never stand behind a helicopter. You don't know that?
No.
Never stand behind a helicopter. Oh, my goodness, I can't believe I'm the first one
really,
to say this.
It's not really something that occurs
If you're getting on a helicopter, don't go... I'll go around the other side. You know how you would if it was a car.
Well, I feel like if you were getting on a helicopter, someone would be directing you to which part of the helicopter to sit on.
You don't want to go around the back of the helicopter because there's another propeller thing there as well.
A mixed reaction on the people's verdict, including this one, who had a very similar tale.
Sarah in Verwood says, not forgiven. This confession really resonates with me. My nan was behind her husband when he was fishing and he cast off and the hook got stuck in her cheek.
Oh, dear.
I always steer clear of fishermen.
Mm.
Wise words, really, at the end there.
Coming up, we join Dave and his mates for a sitcom-style confession in a boarding school involving a pirate radio station, radioactive interference, and the World Cup in the confession we called Radio is a Sound Salvation. But first, it's Julie's confession. Hello, clouds. Hello, sky.
Confess all. Simon Mayo's Confessions podcast.
Julie sends in today's confession. We're back at school. Father Simon, the Confessional Collective. It's 1972. The place was a West Yorkshire coal mining town. I was a young teacher in the local secondary modern, and it was no place for sissies. At this time, the clever kids who passed their 11 plus were sent to grammar school or technical college. The rest went to their local secondary modern, where teachers were expected to teach useful subjects and life skills. These kids were great, but hard as nails, and they could smell signs of teacher weakness or fear.
Mm-hmm.
I was local to the town and a miner's daughter, so was well used to handling the wicked, dry humour of God's own country, which is, for the purposes of this confession, West Yorkshire. I was in my third year of teaching at the school when we gained a new drama teacher, who I will call Tristram.
Of course.
Tristram was from the leafy glades of Surrey and was fresh out of teacher training college. He had high ideals, and after failing to gain a position teaching classics, he'd come up north with a mission to bring some much-needed culture to the rough-and-ready lads and lasses of Yorkshire. At our first staff meeting, Tristram enjoyed giving the staff a long and detailed presentation of his very high teaching goals and subject matter. We immediately recognised what might be some areas of conflict and offered help and advice on appropriate teaching approaches and lesson material. Tristram, though, was having none of it, dismissing all our advice and even insisting that we would also benefit from raising our own standards and following his example. His first day in class didn't go too well. The immediate difficulty was communication, as he failed to understand the Yorkshire brogue. Some phrases completely baffled him. For example, will I eckers like? He didn't get that. I'll tell you this for nout. He didn't get that either. If only Nigel was here, he could have helped us out. His first performing arts lesson was a joy to behold. 15-year-old boys were not used to being told to dance like spirits of the forest. And A Midsummer Night's Dream became more of a nightmare from Hades. The kids were merciless, and Tristram's learnt a few more Yorkshire phrases than he was expecting. However, he ploughed on with his mission, confident in his ability to bring high culture to the darkest of Yorkshire. The kids were becoming restless, parents were complaining, and general discipline was breaking down. Plots and schemes were being hatched in the classroom, and Tristram was falling for many a childish prank. For example, when he wanted to take his class outside for country dancing. Oh, yes. We teachers told him it was no problem and he could plug in the record player in an electric socket in a large tree on the top field.
What?
People on the passing bus were really amused to see him standing on a table with a cable looking for a socket up a giant sycamore whilst being egged on by 35 laughing 12-year-olds. But the scheme that got us into trouble was this. It was usual practice then for a group of us to leave the school on Friday lunchtime and eat at a local hostelry. Tristram was horrified at this, telling us we were unprofessional and threatening to inform the authorities. But, said I, it's approved by the authorities and they even gave us some lunch vouchers as a reward for good work. This wasn't true. But Tristram immediately needed to know why he hadn't been included in this and I advised him to check with the deputy head. Well, said deputy head was extremely fond of a good joke and told Tristram that he was indeed entitled to lunch vouchers and should collect them later at the office. The school secretary was quite masterful at counterfeiting and made a very convincing job of it. And after collecting his vouchers, Tristram was delighted to join us for lunch. The hostelry staff played their part brilliantly, accepting his vouchers and even congratulating him on his excellent teaching. The rest of us had to foot the bill. Tristram was quite unbearable the following week, gloating about his rewards and giving unwelcome advice to long-serving and experienced teachers. When Friday came, he was given double lunch vouchers for his outstanding contribution to teaching, but we decided we must confess our joke at lunch. Unfortunately, he didn't join us at the hostelry.
Oh, no.
So we thought we'd been rumbled, but this was not the case. Tristram, it turned out, had decided to take his girlfriend out for a meal on Friday night using the fake vouchers for payment. The landlady was nowhere to be found, and the evening staff knew nothing about our scheme. He had no cash and became extremely annoyed.
Oh, dear.
Apparently, he caused quite a scene, and the police were called.
Oh, what?
The school head teacher was contacted to vouch for him, and she had to cover the bill. We were all in deep trouble on Monday morning, and we each had to go in turn for a good dressing down from the head teacher, a terrifying figure who patrolled the corridors, tapping her shoes with her smoky dragon cane. Tristram didn't forgive us and left the school at the end of the term to teach drama at a public school in the home counties.
Of course he did.
He vowed never to set foot on Yorkshire soil again. Mm. 54 years have now passed and it's time to beg forgiveness for myself and other teaching staff for our part in this story. Even though he was a massive pain in the rear, we teachers should have known better and set a good example rather than reverting to such childish behaviour. I hope that Tristram eventually forgave us and saw the funny side. I kind of think that he's not... Oh.
Wow, that was a great fade. Ooh, I loved it.
Do that
my
one.
Favourite.
Was that me? Someone wrong is on the faders tonight. I don't know what happened there.
Billy Boxing
I was
gloves.
Affected by Tristram, I think.
Yes,
and his
definitely.
Hello Clouds, Hello Sky approach to drama. Sister Suze.
Well, Julie, like, I kind of started off thinking maybe you're a little bit mean to Tristram. You know, he was just trying to be... helpful and teach well and all of that stuff, but inevitably he just sounds like an idiot, doesn't he? And it was the fact that he was so cross that the police were called.
Yep.
The police were called. Like, you know, if it doesn't work, just foot the bill. How tight can you be?
Well,
I'm going to forgive Julie.
Very tight. I do like the idea of telling 15-year-old lads to be spirits of the forest.
Yes.
What do you say, Matt?
Well, I'm going to forgive Tristram and his... I mean, listen, obviously, you know, there's lots of great drama teachers out there, I'm sure. But there are also quite a lot of them who are a bit of a chancer, like Tristram. He strikes me as very thick, trying to plug his record player into a tree. That should have been a clue. And also...
But they told him it was
they
there.
Did, yeah, someone tells you to... Anyway...
It's
still a tree, isn't it? Also, who doesn't take money out when you're going for a meal, even if you've got your vouchers? You might want to get a drink. So he's thick on all counts, really, isn't he? So for that reason,
yes.
I am going to forgive.
Hilarious revelations from a new generation of sinners. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Today's confession comes from Dave. Dave, thanks very much indeed for this. Father Simon and the Crackly Frequency crew... no warnings needed, I think, for the first time this week.
Good.
Oh, good.
I write seeking forgiveness for myself and my friends who I recently met up with, again, at a school reunion celebrating 40 years since we left. Back in the early summer of 1986, at a perfectly respectable boarding school in Derbyshire, an institution devoted to the noble pursuits of discipline, scholarship, and finding increasingly creative ways to avoid both, a small group of us decided that what the place truly lacked was culture. Not the approved Latin grammar and hymn practice sort of culture, no. We were visionaries, disruptors, pioneers of a new medium. What the school needed, we concluded, was pirate radio.
Ooh.
Fortunately for this bold endeavour, among our number was a boy whose understanding of electronics was so advanced it existed somewhere between science and wizardry. Within days, Radio Eric was born. The name naturally was a tribute to Eric the Half a Bee, the Monty Python song.
Yeah.
Because if one is going to illegally commandeer the airwaves, one might as well do so with a certain intellectual flourish. It lent the whole enterprise a veneer of sophistication, which was helpful given that our actual output consisted largely of rumours, gossip, and the occasional fart. Maybe you could suggest a similar show for Greatest Hits. Oh, one of your streaming.
So yes.
I think that'll go down very well. Jeez. Our programming was, in our eyes, revolutionary, groundbreaking, journalism at its most fearless. We tackled the issues that really mattered. Breaking news, did you hear who was snogging who behind the bike sheds? Analysis was thorough, sources were shaky, accuracy variable. Entertainment value was, however, exceptional. The response was immediate and electrifying. Corridors buzzed with speculation. Dining hall whispers turned into broadcast confirmation within hours. We were no longer mere students. We were broadcasters. Influencers before influencers were a thing. Even some of the teachers knew about Radio Eric. But as history consistently demonstrates, all great empires contain within them the seeds of their own destruction. Ours came in the form of Johnny, our housemaster. Why'd you call your housemaster Johnny?
Yeah.
A little bit casual. Johnny was a man of routine, order, and a deep attachment to having his evening sherry and watching television. One evening, he reported a most peculiar phenomenon. His TV reception had become inexplicably dreadful. Tragically for Johnny, he chose to consult us why this might be. Without hesitation, without even the courtesy of a meaningful pause, the nerd genius we had on board delivered his diagnosis. Grave faces were adopted, voices lowered. It's almost certainly radioactive interference, we explained, from Chernobyl.
Oh.
This was, we felt, particularly convincing given that Chernobyl had indeed occurred in April that year,
yes.
Lending our entirely invented explanation a troubling veneer of plausibility. We elaborated with increasing confidence and decreasing scientific integrity that such radiation could affect electronic signals and possibly people. We advised, purely out of concern, Sir or Johnny, that he should probably minimize his time outdoors. And he believed us completely. In the weeks that followed, Johnny could be observed navigating the school grounds like a man living inside a low-budget spy thriller. He darted between buildings, hugging walls, glancing nervously at the sky, as though it might at any moment begin glowing ominously. Outdoor time was reduced to the absolute legal minimum. Derbyshire, in his mind, had transformed into a nuclear exclusion zone. Meanwhile, with Johnny effectively self-isolating, long before that was fashionable, we found ourselves with unprecedented freedom. Specifically, unrestricted access to the students' television room. And thus began what we considered a true golden age. Not of pirate radio, but of football viewing. Because the 1986 World Cup unfolded before us in a blissful, uninterrupted style. No supervision at all. Everything was perfect. Until Maradona.
Oh, yes.
Diego Maradona's Hand of God goal, as you may recall, was rather controversial because it was a cheat. To one particularly passionate schoolboy in our midst, it was not just controversial, it was a personal affront. And so in a moment of pure, unfiltered sporting outrage, he hurled his can of drink towards the TV. The projectile struck the television with devastating efficiency. The result was catastrophic. The screen died. The match vanished. Silence fell, broken only by the faint hiss of a set that had, moments earlier, been the centre of our universe. We had destroyed our own golden age. And so as the summer term drew to a close, it's like an entire episode of a sitcom.
Yeah.
We found ourselves reflecting on what we'd achieved. We'd launched a pirate radio station, we'd convinced our housemaster he was living under nuclear threat, and we had, with astonishing efficiency, engineered our own downfall by breaking the television. As for apologies, well, we feel they are due not to Johnny, who really should have questioned the nuclear theory we came up with, not to Mikhail Gorbachev, who may or may not have benefited from our creative interpretation of global events, but to our fellow boarding housemates for giving them greatness and then smashing it with a well-aimed can of drink. He put drink in inverted commas. So I can't, I've got no idea why. Why would you put drink in inverted commas?
Oh, because it might have been a different kind of drink.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay. Yeah. Something at 3.5%.
I think so. Like that.
Yes. Kindest regards, Dave. Well, so it's a boarding school story of making your housemaster think he's under nuclear attack, and then blowing up the television with a can of ale. Anyway, Sister Susie, what do you say?
Well, I feel sorry for the housemaster, because they weren't very nice to him. And also, you know, a waste of beer, if it was beer, or a waste of drink. And vandalism at the telly, you know, just because you're annoyed. And I never get this with football, is that why would you throw things and get so cross? Because it's just a game.
Oh,
that's my opinion. But I'm not going to forgive.
Brother Matthew.
Okay, so I'm going to forgive. Number one, the housemaster Johnny is obviously a bit thick. The after effects of Chernobyl are going to be that your telly is just a little bit snowy. That doesn't make sense at all.
No.
And him running around and trying to avoid the skies. How did he even get that job? Anyway, throwing the stuff at the telly, that was self-defeating. Would have missed the Gary Lineker goal, wouldn't they? If they'd thrown it after the handball, even though England went out. But there were plenty of other decent games in Mexico 86, so you missed out on that. So they've already had their punishment in a way. So for all those reasons, I'm going to forgive.
Confess all. Simon Mayo's Confessions Podcast.
Can you sound like you're having a stroke at the end of every single episode?
You aged about 50 years.
That was.
Something from Harry Potter.
Yeah, it was like that, wasn't it? What range? That's so good. So,
in a way.
This week's edition of Confessions coming with a summary of the entire 1986 World Cup.
Wasn't it? I got that in the end as well, didn't I? Yeah.
Thankfully, it's the end of the podcast, so if you've got a tale to tell, please send us yours. Confessions at Greatest Hits Radio. .co.uk. Over to Brother Matt for this week's secret code phrase.
Throwing up on a tight weave. Can we get away with that? Let's say that. Throwing up on a tight weave.
If you made it this far, you can post this week's code phrase, which is
throwing up on a tight weave.
Leave it on Threads or Blue Sky or Instagram, or you can leave it in your friend's Prada handbag. Matt's on X, which is where you'd expect to find him.
Yeah,
remember to leave us a 5-star review. Don't forget to share the podcast in a bath with a friend at work. We'll be back next week with another fresh batch of confessions. Until then, Sister Susie says,
ta-ra.
Brother Matt says,
bye.
Holly says,
hasta la vista, baby.
Thank you for listening.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Want to confess? Simon Mayo would love to hear your story. He may even keep it to himself.
He definitely won't keep it to himself.
Send gory details, please, to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.